Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Tomorrow marks the 19th anniversary of the September 11th attacks, and we're going to play some sound for you from that day. And as a warning, although I don't think you'll be surprised, that sound is hard to listen to. On the morning of September 11th, 2001, on ABC's Good Morning America, host Charlie Gibson and Diane Sawyer were getting a report of what was happening at the World Trade Center.
As fire crews are descending on this area, it does not appear that there's any kind of an effort up there yet. Now remember, oh my God.
That looks like a second plane.
I did not see a plane go in. That just exploded.
We just saw another plane coming in from the side.
And then their reaction that followed reflects how the nation was feeling that day.
Oh, this is terrifying. Awful.
To watch powerless is a horror.
That day, that tragedy was incomprehensible. And I don't know about you, but I find that sound in this moment very difficult to listen to. Now, 19 years later, we are facing another national crisis. It's a pandemic that has caused almost 200,000 deaths in the United States. And we find ourselves thinking about each tragedy in the context of the other. And we wanted to have a conversation about that. And joining us to do that is just the right person. Mitch Zukov, professor in narrative studies at Boston University and author of Fall and Rise, The Story of 9/11. Welcome back to Radio Boston, Mitch.
Thank you, Tiziana.
And listeners, we invite your calls too. How are you reflecting on this 19th anniversary of September 11th in the midst of another national crisis? What is similar or different about these two crises and our responses to them, especially as we near 200,000 deaths nationally from COVID-19. Is it hard to conceptualize those deaths in a way that the losses on the September 11th felt so immediate? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or you can tweet us on this one at Radio Boston. So, Mitch, I just want to start with what is on your mind as tomorrow's anniversary approaches?
Well, I think, like everyone, we're in this sort of, this, as you've described, this incredible new crisis that's sort of unfolding more slowly, but just as all-consuming as 9/11 was for those of us who experienced it. As others have pointed out, you know, we're experiencing now a 9/11 level tragedy every 3 days, with 3,000 deaths every 3 days in this COVID crisis. And so I'm thinking, I think as you are, and I think a lot of people are, what is this going to mean for the national character? What is it going to mean for who we are as a people, who we are as a community, who we are as a country? And I think sadly and tragically even, I think we have to conclude that we are a much different people, or reacting differently, at least, than we did in the immediate aftermath of 9/11.
So, Mitch, I want to ask about that because, of course, there must be something in that that's true. But at the same time, how do we get our minds around the slow-moving crisis and tragedy we're in now? There was something so profound and immediate and shocking and unexpected about that day. This is just different. And aren't we built so that we would process these things differently?
I think that's exactly what's happening, that we would, and it's really, it's great and powerful that you did the Good Morning America in the lead in here. We all witnessed it. We were all witnesses to what was happening. And it was on an endless loop in our eyes, in our ears, in the immediate aftermath. And so we were almost sort of programmed as humans to have this fight or flight response. And we knew what we were supposed to do because we could see it in front of us. When you have, as the president likes to say, an invisible enemy, like a virus, that unfolds slowly, that doesn't have flames in the sky, we are not quite sure how to react to it, even though I think, you know, intellectually, we can understand that these are both existential threats, but they take different forms. So we are reacting differently.
And listeners, we're talking to Mitch Zuckoff, professor in narrative studies at Boston University, about the anniversary of September 11th, which is tomorrow, and how we process that in the context of another national crisis. If you'd like to share your reflections, you can join us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Mitch, I know you have remarked on the unity of 2001. And the disunity of this moment. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, if you think about it, first, in terms of the absence of partisanship after 9/11, you know, on September 14th, Congress voted, first the Senate voted 98-0, and then the House voted 420-1 with one opponent to basically give George Bush and the Republican in power unending power, to unending authority, to do whatever was needed to hunt down the people who were responsible for this. And Barbara Lee, the one who objected, a California congresswoman, was just worried about the blank check idea, which obviously proved prescient in terms of what happened in Iraq. But essentially, everyone was behind this. Everyone sort of lined up and said, this is no time for us to point fingers at whether the Republicans in power had kept us safe or whether it was an intelligence failure or what have you. Everyone came together, I think. And I think those of us who lived through it experienced it. And so there was this moment of national unity, and more than a moment, it lasted a while. I think we all know that we have not seen a moment of national unity here. We've seen a tremendous disunity. Disagreements over the science, disagreements over whether wearing a mask was an act of partisan, approval for one side or the other. And so I think that has been an incredibly stark difference. And frankly, for someone who's studied 9/11 and is living through COVID, deeply disappointing.
Mitch, I'd love to go to the phones here, 800-423-8255. We have Lauren on the line from Somerville. How are you reflecting, Lauren?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm finding this a new instance, a new thing to be in. I was 11 years old, and I had just started at a new school, and we were all kind of herded into a cafeteria, and we had that air of not knowing what was going on, being excited, and we didn't know what was going on. We thought it was, like, bad, but we were in it together, and it was unknown, and it was kind of, like, maybe exciting. And then later we learned from our parents just how bad it was. And mm-hmm. now, being a mental health professional as an adult, seeing this pandemic and seeing these out, like, where have all my friends gone? And what is happening right now? It's fascinating to be in a generational trauma, as it were, it seems to be, at least.
Thanks for that, Lauren. And Mitch, I heard you when Lauren said now an adult and a mental health professional, I heard you respond to that. So maybe I can let you react there.
Well, I think Lauren's really onto something in terms of the idea that when we experienced 9/11, we were able to do it as a herd, in the sense. We gathered together, we huddled together, whether it was in classrooms or in our offices or in our homes, and we were all connected in that way. We were all experiencing it together, even if it was via media. But now we're incredibly disconnected by design, obviously, to prevent the virus from spreading further. But I think that there's a feeling of isolation as this is happening. And I think as a mental health professional, Lauren is sort of doing a really interesting job of linking those two in terms of how we as humans are reacting differently to these two events.
I'd like to bring another caller in here, Mitch. We have Andrew on the line from West Roxbury. Andrew, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a question about what Mitch thought about the impact that this, I guess we can call it, prolonged mass casualty incident like COVID-19 lasting multiple months has had versus a singular mass casualty incident like 9/11.
Thanks for that. Andrew, Mitch, what are you thinking?
It's a great question, Andrew. I think it remains to be seen, frankly, just how deeply it cuts. Because frankly, I would have thought 200,000 deaths or whatever the number is would make it clear to everyone just how we are all affected by this. But it does seem to be a disjointed effect where we all could identify with the 3,000 dead in 9/11. And for some reason, by a factor of almost 70 times as many people, we are not. So I think it would be premature for me to say how it's going to affect us long term. But it's a study.
You know, Mitch, I remember early on in covering the pandemic, we did a segment where we were getting calls from all over the place by people who were benefiting from or participating in mutual aid societies, neighbors coming together to help neighbors, to support each other. We haven't done another segment on that, so I don't know if we would still be getting those calls now. But there was, I think, a sense that we were in this together and had solidarity and we're going to need to solve problems together. Do you think we've lost that in the arc of these last 6 to 8 months, depending on where you as an individual count the beginning?
You know, I'm an optimist by nature, and we all remember in the beginning of this, and just what you're talking about, the mutual aid, I thought there was a real parallel between, you know, in the immediate aftermath of 9/11, you could not go near a fire station in New York without sort of encountering people delivering cakes and coming to say thank you to the firefighters. And we experienced that here with the COVID crisis, where we had the 7 p.m. people leaning out their windows to thank the healthcare workers and to clap for them as they change shifts. And yet now I do feel that has started to go away. People have started to move back into their own lives and their own concerns. So I fear that we are losing it a bit, I'm afraid.
I'm sorry, I had five thoughts crash into my head at once after listening to you, because there's so much here. I think the first one that I will comb out is the fact that there was something about the attack on September 11th that we understood as an attack on our union. Yes. And early on in the experience of the virus, and I think maybe even arguably today, we had a very much a philosophy that this was happening to states and individuals in states. And I mean, I remember Governor Baker's frustration in those early press conferences trying to get PPE and asking the federal government to help. Did that state by state problem solving and the need to do state by state problem solving and emphasis on it change our sense of shared experience as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. As soon as we were sort of divided into states, that there were blue states and red states, and there were hot spots and other, as soon as that happened, it gave the virus a footing. It's almost like it was sort of serving the enemy. After 9/11, we understood the face of this enemy, and by 9:30 that morning, the CIA understood this was Al Qaeda. And we all collectively understood it was an attack on all of us, even though it was an East Coast event, even though, I mean, you talk to anyone across this country, people felt as deeply personal about it as anyone, you know, as you can imagine. But you're right. As soon as there was, and let's face it, it happened from Washington. There was this feeling that governors had to figure it out on their own, you know, how to ask a Bob Kraft to get Chinese PPE to get enough, you know, N95s or KN95s.
The owner of the New England Patriots who used their private jet. No, just for context
exactly.
For listeners, go ahead.
Yeah. You know, we people were, you know, sort of governors were talking about competing against other governors I mean, the idea of that, that they were having to compete with other governors for whether it was ventilators or PPE or what have you, that immediately made it every man or every woman for herself. And that completely undermined any possibility of a sort of a national response to this crisis.
So I'm just going to bring in one more voice. We got a tweet from Katie Gairdon. Katie, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, saying, I'm not trying to be flippant, but in light of all we're doing, going through now, 9/11 seems quaint. It's amazing how desensitized we are now to the staggering loss of life. What are the rituals or approaches, and Mitch, we've got only a couple of minutes, that we can be using to share this sense of weight and experience with each other? We've talked a lot about the disconnect. How can we reconnect?
I think it is part of the job, and I understand. I don't take Katie's comment as flip. I think it's true. It's this sort of the concept of, you know, you boil a frog, if you throw it in hot water, which is what happened to 9/11, it jumps out because it reacts. But this slowly boiling, this slow boiling we've all experienced, it's normalizing, or it's conditioning us to this. I think it's our job in the media to do a better job and do more of what we were doing initially in telling the stories of the losses, of highlighting how the webs of family are being unwound as each empty person, empty seat at every dinner table. We have to drive that home, and we have to connect everyone to the idea that 200,000 dead is not a number. And it is, you know, it is 200,000 times 100 tragedies of every person who those lives touch.
Mitch, I really appreciate it. That's Mitch Zukov, professor in narrative studies at Boston University and author of Fall and Rise, The Story of 9/11. Thank you so much, Mitch.
Thank you.